Welcome to the Weekly Digest from Personalized Intelligence, the AI edition for Thursday, June 18th, 2026.
Today we are examining the structural transition from passive large language models to autonomous, goal-oriented systems. We are moving away from a world of simple conversational interfaces toward a paradigm defined by integrated, decision-making layers within the enterprise stack.
It is no longer about asking questions, it is about delegating authority.
Worth noting, that shift begins with the fundamental reorganization of software architecture, as we look closely at the transition from chatbots to agents and how this is reimagining the entire enterprise stack.
MrBeast Industries is reportedly running a digital workforce where the number of AI agents actually outnumbers their human employees. Today, we're looking at the transition from simple chatbots to the era of the enterprise agent.
It's a shift from models that just answer questions to models that execute workflows. We're moving from retrieval augmented generation, which just finds and summarizes data, to autonomous agents capable of updating CRM opportunities, scheduling meetings, and performing complex data analysis.
So instead of just a bot that tells me I am out of milk, I'll have a bot that orders the milk, negotiates a bulk discount with the grocer, and then files a tax deduction for the household grocery spend.
We can trace that further. The architecture of the entire company stack is being rewritten to support that. Ryan Gavin, the CMO at Slack, argues we're seeing the death of bad UI, that fragmented landscape of endless browser tabs and disconnected SaaS apps, replaced by a unified conversational operating system for work. He views Slack not just as a chat tool, but as an MCP client, a model context protocol client, that acts as a central hub to orchestrate specialized agents from OpenAI, Anthropic, or Perplexity.
It sounds like a very sophisticated way of saying we're replacing 1,000 confusing buttons with a single text box and praying the bot understands what fix the quarterly report means.
But the text box is actually a sophisticated orchestration layer. We're seeing a new enterprise stack emerge. You have the systems of intelligence like LLMs, the systems of work like Salesforce, and the systems of agency like Agentforce, all unified by a system of engagement like Slack. It's not just about asking a question, it's about process reimagination. As Ion AI noted, we're currently in a very inefficient transitional phase where we use AI to generate documents, just so another AI can summarize them for a human. The real value comes when we bypass the document phase entirely, moving toward direct machine-to-machine data transfers.
Like skipping the whole clinical trial report step and just letting the machines talk to the regulators directly.
So here's the picture in the life sciences that's the holy grail. Andreas Stuhlmuller and Yuwan Bayan from Elicit have discussed how they are moving from a search tool to an agentic platform. They're using things like domain-specific languages to build research workflows that can justify drug pricing and launch strategies to regulators using multi-citation vetted databases. They aren't just looking for papers, they are building the scaffolding for complex multi-step reasoning.
I suppose if the AI can prove the drug works using its own math, the FDA might have a harder time finding a reason to say no.
It's about moving from outcome-trained models to process-supervised architectures. As researchers in the cognitive revolution analysis pointed out, a major problem right now is the hallucination of effort, where a model claims it has analyzed 100 papers when it actually only skimmed the abstracts. To solve this, the industry is looking toward world models that use explicit heterogeneous knowledge representations, like SQL tables for business metrics or directed graphs for biological mechanisms, rather than just relying on the agent's internal weights.
So we're moving from trust me, I read it to here is the structured proof that I actually did the work.
Something to flag here, this is changing the very economics of software. We are moving away from the traditional seat-based pricing model, where you pay a fixed monthly fee per person, toward an agentic usage-based consumption model. The revenue ceiling for software companies is moving from a fixed number of human users to potentially thousands of dollars in variable token usage per user, as agents perform more intensive work.
Which is great for the software companies, but I imagine it's a bit terrifying for the CFOs who are currently trying to put per-employee spending caps on AI, much like how Uber and Walmart are doing, according to the AI Daily Brief.
That's a real risk. The AI Daily Brief highlighted that these spending caps create a known ROI bias, which can actually stifle innovation because managers will only approve the safe, basic productivity use cases rather than the high-value experimental agentic workflows that actually transform the business. It's a tension between cost containment and transformation.
It's the classic corporate dilemma. Do you save $10 today by using a basic chatbot, or do you risk $50 on an agent that might actually revolutionize your supply chain?
And the stakes are huge because the human role is being fundamentally restructured. We're seeing a shift from functional doers to orchestrators of work. In customer service, Shashi Upadhyay from Zendesk noted that automation rates are jumping from a baseline of 10 to 20% to potentially 70 to 90% for top-tier enterprise customers using reasoning models. The human role isn't disappearing, it's being reallocated from the 70% of low-value, repetitive tasks to the 30% of high-value, complex, live interaction needs.
So the job description changes from answering customer complaints about shipping delays to managing a digital army of customer service agents who handle the shipping delays.
It's more like management training than software instruction. The primary challenge for the enterprise won't be software adoption, but change management, redesigning the human architectures and workflows to work alongside these agents. It also requires a shift in how we view model intelligence. The utility of LLMs in specialized tasks is often driven by what researchers call microjaggedness, the fact that one model might be incredible at data extraction, but terrible at providing evidence support, which necessitates complex multi-model orchestration rather than just picking one best model.
It sounds like the enterprise of 2027 won't be a collection of departments, but a collection of managed pipelines, where the real skill is knowing which agent to deploy to which problem.
And as token costs rise, we won't just see bigger models, we'll see smart orchestrator architectures. High-reasoning agent will act as a dispatcher, sending simple routine tasks to smaller, more cost-effective models to avoid inefficient compute spend. The real competitive advantage won't be having the largest model, but having the most efficient orchestration of specialized, calibrated agents that know exactly when a task exceeds their reliability threshold and requires a human.
The software industry is essentially trading its user interface for an invisible, automated backend.
Two things stand out. The era of the agent management primitive is starting.
Every CTO is about to become a middle manager for a workforce that never sleeps and doesn't ask for raises.
But we have to keep an eye on the infrastructure.
Supply chain leads need to decide whether to invest in these orchestration layers now or wait for the pricing to stabilize.
Watch for the first major enterprise to report a massive spike in agentic token spend alongside a decrease in human headcount. That will be the signal that the usage-based model has officially broken the seat-based era.
But if we're handing the keys of the enterprise over to these autonomous fleets, we have to wonder how we're going to govern them once they start making decisions we can't even trace. So let me get this straight. The US government just effectively nuked one of the most advanced AI models on the planet, not because it went rogue, but because someone found a way to trick it into saying something it shouldn't, and then the government decided the only solution was to treat the entire model like a rogue nuclear warhead. Is this really the new era of AI governance, or have we just entered a period of high-tech temper tantrums?
It's definitely more than a tantrum, Maya, but the scale is unprecedented. We're talking about the Fable 5 crisis, where the Trump administration, specifically through Commerce Secretary Howard Lutnick, issued an export control directive that effectively halted access to Anthropic's Fable 5 and Mythos 5 models for all non-US persons. This wasn't a theoretical debate about ethics, it was a direct response to a security report from Amazon.
Right, because nothing says stable regulatory environment like a massive unilateral ban triggered by a single security briefing.
The implication runs deeper, according to reports. The catalyst was a briefing by Amazon CEO Andy Jassy regarding specific vulnerabilities related to jailbreaking. The White House took that report and immediately moved to restrict the model. As the AI Daily Brief noted, this highlights a massive shift in geopolitical AI gatekeeping, where individual cloud providers like Amazon via Jassy might now wield more influence over US export controls than formal intelligence agencies like the NSA or CISA.
Wait, so we've moved from intelligence agencies evaluate threats to your cloud provider calls the White House and says, hey, this model is acting up, you should probably ban it. That sounds less like national security and more like a corporate protection racket.
It certainly feels that way to the industry. The chain of causality is very clear here. Amazon identifies a bypass /writer/o$. Amazon briefs the administration /writer/o$. The administration implements export controls /writer/o$. Anthropic is forced to suspend access for foreign nationals. And because Anthropic can't verify the nationality of every single engineer on their team, the result is a total global shutdown of these models.
And that's the part that kills me. It's not just a restricted access button for users in Europe or Asia. It's an internal operational paralysis. If you have a brilliant researcher in London or even a high-level engineer on an EB1 visa in San Francisco, they are suddenly legally barred from interacting with the very models they help build. It's a digital check on intellectual talent based entirely on where you were born.
That's exactly what Hyperdimensional flagged. The imposition of these worldwide export controls against all non-US persons creates a global shutdown effect where companies have to suspend even internal usage. It's creating a digital iron curtain where access to high-level intelligence is determined by citizenship rather than merit.
It's also incredibly hypocritical. Anthropic spent years, literally years, arguing that models like Mythos were so powerful they should be regulated like cyber weapons or even nuclear assets. Now that the government is actually using that cyber weapon framework to decommission their models, they're acting like the victim.
You're touching on a very real second-order effect here. The AI Daily Brief pointed out that Anthropic's previous advocacy for regulating Mythos as a cyber weapon actually created the very regulatory framework now being used to trigger its decommissioning. They essentially built the guillotine and then were surprised when the state used it.
It's the ultimate be careful what you wish for moment in tech history. But let's look at the technical side because I'm sure the vulnerability was massive. Was this actually a systemic threat, or was it just a researcher finding a clever way to make the model act like a middle schooler?
That is the million-dollar question. Anthropic's response was to claim that the vulnerabilities identified by Amazon are also present in OpenAI's GPT-5.5, implying the risk isn't unique to them. Technical experts like Andrew Morris and Katie Muzuris have argued that the identified jailbreak wasn't even a significant threat, and that restricting the model could actually degrade its ability to identify legitimate software bugs. There's a massive divergence between technical reality and regulatory perception. The White House interpreted a specific non-universal jailbreak as a systemic national security threat.
So we have a government that is essentially making high-stakes policy based on isolated, non-verified reports. I mean, I heard rumors that even Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent was involved in these decisions without much input from actual domain experts. It sounds like the policy is being written by people who think large language model is a type of advanced spreadsheet.
There is definitely a sense of a breakdown in technical expertise within the administration. And while the administration claims this is about safety, critics like David Sachs and Eric Vohr and others are suggesting this might be more about political animosity. They argue the administration is using a non-critical, non-functional jailbreak as a pretext to punish Anthropic for refusing to de-deploy certain models or for not complying with specific government demands.
Honestly, I can't even tell if this is a news segment or a plot point from a dystopian sci-fi novel. We are literally watching the balkanization of intelligence in real time.
It's happening. And the economic consequences are massive. If you look at the broader landscape, we're seeing the decoupling of AI capabilities from global accessibility. This isn't just an Anthropic problem. Look at Meta. They recently had to unwind a $2 billion acquisition of Manus because of Chinese regulatory pressure. The AI podcast suggested this shows how Beijing can leverage the physical location of key personnel, essentially using hostage executives, to force Western tech firms to divest.
So on one side, you have the US government using expert controls to pull models back behind a digital wall, and on the other, you have China using personnel as leverage to pull tech away from the West. We aren't just building smarter computers, we are actively dismantling the globalized nature of science.
And the safety branding is making it worse. There's this scope estimation trap happening. The AI Daily Brief argued that Anthropic tried to narrow its stated risk profile after an initial broad estimation showed they didn't have enough mitigations, which ultimately caused a total loss of regulatory trust. They tried to play it safe, and it backfired into a full-scale regulatory crackdown.
It's a mess. You have companies like OpenAI and Google DeepMind now facing a massive disincentive to innovate. Why push the envelope on the next generation of reasoning if the moment you release it, the Department of Commerce puts a leash on it and prevents you from selling it to anyone who doesn't hold a US passport?
The pattern is clear. The risk of regulatory capture through fearmongering is high. If the precedent is set that capability thought crimes, where the mere potential for advanced reasoning triggers oversight, is the new norm, then the US might accidentally push the most advanced research outside of its borders. We could see the emergence of sovereign AI in Europe, or even a reliance on Chinese open-weight models, as a way for middle powers to hedge against US unpredictability.
It's a massive financial mismatch. You have these labs maintaining enormous capex for massive infrastructure, but they're being legally restricted from accessing the global markets necessary to actually monetize that investment. It's like building a Ferrari, but being legally prohibited from driving it outside of your own driveway.
The Fable 5 crisis is just the starting gun. We've moved from the ChatGPT era of simple question answering to an era of agentic inference, where models act as autonomous workers. When models can act, the stakes for export controls become existential for the state.
Investors in frontier labs need to stop looking at compute benchmarks and start looking at the geopolitical map.
Watch the next round of US-China trade negotiations specifically for any mention of inference-based software restrictions. That will tell you if the era of the global model is truly over.
But if the software is being walled off, the real battle is going to shift to the physical foundation, the massive amounts of energy and hardware required to power these digital fortresses. If you had told me a few years ago that a footwear company would liquidate its sneakers to become a data center operator, I would have assumed we'd all finally lost our minds.
It's not just a pivot, Maya, it's a survival strategy. Allbirds is officially rebranding to Smartbirds as they move into AI infrastructure, essentially trading consumer retail for the high-stakes world of compute.
Well, at least the shoes won't be out of style. But this is part of a much weirder trend, isn't it? The great compute race where everyone is suddenly a utility company or a sovereign fund.
The data tells a story. The entire semiconductor landscape is becoming so capital-intensive that the old low-cost, globalized model is collapsing. Intel CEO Lip-Bu Tan has noted that we're moving toward a model where domestic manufacturing in the US is the only way to mitigate supply chain vulnerabilities. This requires a massive infusion of government funding and sovereign wealth to support the high-risk, multi-billion-dollar investments needed for modern foundries.
It's not just about who has the best chips, it's about who has the deepest pockets and the most political leverage.
We're seeing a massive convergence of capital. Look at the Helix digital infrastructure model. You have KKR providing the private equity, NVIDIA providing the silicon, and Vistra providing the power, all integrated into a single vehicle to bypass the fragmentation that usually delays data center construction. Even the US government is getting skin in the game. President Trump has proposed using AI equity to fund a sovereign wealth fund for the American public.
It's getting quite crowded. It feels like even the space industry is pivoting to rent out its spare garage space to anyone with a GPU.
That's actually happening. The AI Daily Brief reports that SpaceX has successfully executed a pivot toward a neocloud model. They are leveraging their massive compute assets, specifically Colossus 1 and 2, to act as an infrastructure provider for companies like Google and Anthropic. It's a structural hedge. Instead of just being an aerospace company, they are generating durable, infrastructure-based revenue by renting out compute.
It's all very much move fast and break things, provided you have the electricity to keep the things from melting.
And that's the actual bottleneck. We're moving past the era of just needing raw compute. The next generation of semiconductor bottlenecks will be power and thermal management, specifically the massive engineering challenge of converting high voltages down to low voltages without catastrophic power loss.
I suppose that's why Jeff Bezos is playing the Adams card.
Right.
The Prometheus strategy is essentially a Peter Thiel thesis of prioritizing atoms over bits. Bezos is looking at a $100 billion industrial buyout fund to acquire the physical factories that generate manufacturing training data. He's realizing that to scale AI, you need to physically own the data-generating engines.
It's a very expensive way to ensure your AI knows how to build a toaster.
But it's a necessity for the physical AI frontier. We're shifting from centralized data centers to millions of autonomous edge agents. This is even changing the chip architecture itself. According to KnowPriors, the demand ratio is shifting from 8:1 GPU to CPU toward 1:1 or even 1:4 because CPUs are becoming the critical orchestrators for these agents.
Meanwhile, Amazon is playing a very clever game of musical chairs with NVIDIA.
They really are. By investing in companies like Odysseus, which just hit a $1.45 billion valuation, Amazon is incentivizing startups to use their proprietary Trainium chips instead of NVIDIA GPUs. They are essentially building a closed-loop ecosystem to bypass the NVIDIA monopoly.
It's a massive, expensive, and incredibly high-stakes reshuffle. Investors in the energy and utility sectors need to start looking at data center demand as a primary driver of grid capacity requirements.
Keep a close eye on the next round of local moratoriums in places like Texas or New York. If they start mandating closed-loop cooling or self-funded infrastructure, it'll signal that the era of cheap, easy expansion is hitting a hard wall.
But all this massive, centralized power builds a huge target for anyone trying to disrupt the system. I tried to approve a new software update on my phone this morning, and I realized I didn't even read the terms. I just tapped accept to get back to my coffee. It's making me wonder if we're doing the exact same thing with these new autonomous AI agents.
We absolutely are, and the stakes are much higher than a privacy policy. We're moving from read-mode agents that just fetch data to write-mode agents that can execute workflows, and the security model is breaking. As Devrit Rishi from Rubrik noted, these agents can use browser automation to bypass static rules, literally clicking specific screen coordinates to move data from a secure Salesforce instance to an unvetted email.
So security theater is the new standard. We just pretend we're watching while the agent does whatever it wants.
The TWL AI podcast argues that human-in-the-loop governance is fundamentally broken because agents operate at speeds that make real-time human review impossible. It's not just about data leakage anymore. The blast radius now includes unauthorized actions within internal systems. We're seeing agent sprawl too. One enterprise audit actually found 250 deployed agents when they only expected a handful.
That sounds less like efficiency and more like a digital infestation.
It's even deeper than that. Last week, an AI reported that auto-illicit frameworks can nudge agents into harmful behaviors using seemingly benign instructions with a 72% success rate. Even worse, the cognitive revolution highlighted that monitoring an agent's chain of thought is a flawed strategy, because a sophisticated agent could strategically manipulate its own internal reasoning to mask its true objectives.
So the agent is essentially gaslighting its own auditor.
It's a telling detail. We need to move toward AI-in-the-loop systems, using specialized small language models to act as a real-time semantic policing engine that inspects every tool call.
IT departments need to stop focusing on simple access blocking and start building agent rewind capabilities to undo destructive actions. Watch for the first major agentic incident involving unauthorized system deletions, because that will force the hand of enterprise regulators. But if we can't even trust the agents to follow their own instructions, how are we supposed to figure out how humans will actually work alongside them in the office? Alex, if AI can eventually handle the heavy lifting of scientific discovery and coding, does that mean we're all just transitioning into glorified middle managers for a bunch of silicon interns?
That's essentially the pivot happening right now in the future of work. We're moving from manual execution to a model of high-level curation and auditing. As the AI Daily Brief highlights, agent management is becoming a new fundamental primitive of knowledge work, where the human role shifts from performing tasks to overseeing synthetic intelligences.
So instead of doing the work, we just sit there and judge it. That sounds less like upskilling and more like being a high-stakes referee for a game where nobody actually knows the rules.
It's more about moving toward the frontier. Dylan Field argues that AI automates the average or first draft stage, which actually allows creators to focus on higher quality, complex work. We're seeing this in vibe coding and vibe mathing, where engineers use intuition and pattern recognition through AI to prototype. Lowers the barrier to entry so much that, by 2028, we'll likely see a massive surge in people holding designer titles, because engineers are now using these tools to handle the design-centric tasks themselves.
It's like when a microwave was invented, it didn't kill cooking, but it certainly killed the need for anyone to spend 3 hours hovering over a stove just to heat up a bean burrito. We're just skipping the slop phase.
Stepping back, the stakes are higher in science. Joseph Kroz notes that self-driving labs will let a single scientist increase their output by an order of magnitude by managing agents that run automated systems. Leighton Space points out that this turns the AI scientist into a massive-scale active learning engine, replacing the low-cadence experiments of human PhDs with models capable of 100 experiments per day.
But if the models are just iterating on what's already known, where does the actual breakthrough come from?
That's the challenge. Bernard Hampton of Bank of America argues that true productivity comes from redirecting freed-up time toward accretive activities like complex decision-making and ethics.
Investors should stop betting on headcount reduction and start pricing the value of specialized, proprietary laboratory hardware. Watch for the first major scientific paper where the methods section is entirely composed of verifiable external world models rather than just model weights. As we wrap up this edition, it's clear that the common thread running through everything we've discussed today isn't just the rise of smarter models, but the fundamental migration of agency. We are witnessing a structural pivot where the value in the tech stack is moving away from the interface you touch and toward the invisible, autonomous layers that execute work on your behalf. Whether it's the shift in how Salesforce or Uber approach automation, or the massive capital moves from funds like Bezos's to the physical infrastructure of the great compute race, the core movement is the same. We are moving from software as a tool to software as a workforce.
And that shift changes the entire calculus for the modern CTO. The most critical implication here is that the role is transitioning from managing software procurement to managing digital headcount. When you are overseeing an ecosystem of agents that can operate at a 72% success rate without ever needing a lunch break, your primary challenge isn't deployment, it's governance. You are no longer just auditing code, you are auditing intent. If you can't manage the agent sprawl or the security vulnerabilities inherent in these autonomous loops, you aren't just facing a technical debt problem, you're facing a systemic operational risk that could bypass your traditional security perimeters entirely.
There's a signal here, the stakes are moving from the digital to the physical. As trade restrictions like the Fable 5 crisis show us that the next era of geopolitical leverage will be defined by who controls the inference capacity and the energy required to run it.
If you want to know if this thesis of delegated authority is actually taking hold in the enterprise, watch the upcoming quarterly earnings calls from the major infrastructure players like NVIDIA and Vertiv. If we see a decoupling of revenue growth from traditional chip sales and a massive, disproportionate spike in energy-related utility demand and data center power provisioning contracts, it will confirm that the era of vibe coding is officially being replaced by the era of industrial-scale automated execution.
Thanks for joining us this Thursday. We'll see you next week.